Hey everyone, Rob B here with Rob D, and this week's episode is one to really inspire you. Rob's previously made an investment in a property at a very difficult time, and we wanted to talk about that again today because we feel that the lessons you can draw from that are so important.
Welcome to the Property Podcast. It's a Thursday morning. That means that we're taking time out of our day job of advising a multi-million pound property fund to bring you some of the insights that we've learned along the way. Doing so for free, of course. Before we get into this week's episode, now would be a great time to make sure that you're subscribed to the Property Podcast. So if you're on Apple Podcasts, hit the little plus button. If you're on Spotify, you can hit follow and make sure that you never miss an episode.
So a bit of a biased news story of the week, because I'm going back to Liverpool, but it's a really, really interesting headline, and it's one that you possibly would not have noticed yourself, because Liverpool has seen a Chinese and Hong Kong buyer boom, with purchases up 160% since 2017. And we've previously talked about how Liverpool does attract overseas money, because it is a world-famous city. Yes, it's easy to understand how people would invest in London and in Manchester, because they too are world famous cities. But Liverpool actually is one of the strongest performers for attracting overseas investment ahead of much other well-known cities around the UK. And that's because of its world famous status. Thank you, the Beatles and Liverpool Football Club. So what does this mean? Well, what it means is that they are seeing value. And while Liverpool, time and time again, is showing itself to be an incredible place to invest, and still with loads of upside potential, there seems to be a lack of interest from the rest of the UK. And it seems that the UK investor market is quite slow to react. So London was very popular years ago. Manchester and Birmingham now are very popular, and rightly so. But places like Liverpool and Nottingham, somewhere else we feel is kind of underrated, just aren't getting that love and attention. And it will come. But why wait for the herd? Get in now. But a word of warning, so many people will just rush to Liverpool and buy the latest, shiniest investment. But unfortunately, there is a lot of stuff in the city that I would not touch with a barge pole. So you have to be very, very careful, especially if you go for a new build property. So if you don't know what you're doing, make sure you work with local experts to make sure you're investing in the right areas and the right type of properties. But with research, you can do very, very well. Hey everyone, before we get into the main topic, portfolio has reached a massive milestone. The minimum investment amount has dropped to just £1,000. And if that wasn't exciting enough, we've also removed the waitlist. So the barriers to property investment are being smashed. More people can take advantage of portfolio than ever before. If you want to find out more, head to portfolio.co.uk or go to your app store and download immediately and get started in minutes. Now, you lovely listeners are always interested in when we make an investment in property. And it's understandable, right? We talk about it a lot, so you kind of want to know what we're doing. And maybe you can take some of the lessons from our investments and replicate that in your own life. And because of that, I think this episode you're really going to enjoy. The world's a bit of a crazy place right now. You could say it's permanently been that way. But people can be nervous about making an investment when the world isn't that stable. But often, it can be the best time to make an investment when things feel, you know, a bit off kilter and the general public are nervous. So this week's episode is really split in two parts. Rob made an investment at the height of the pandemic, when pretty much nobody was investing. I'm sure some of you listening did make investments, but most of the country switched off to making investments. Their focus was navigating the pandemic, and understandably so. But as I've already said, great opportunities can be made from investing when there's uncertainty. So in this episode, we're going to start by listening back to Rob's experience of investing in the middle of the pandemic. And then importantly, at the end, we're going to add a new segment where we look at the results. Rob and I are going to jump on the mics again and talk about exactly what's happened since then. And has he got any regrets? What would he do differently? And ultimately, what you want to know, how it's performed. Now, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, you would have heard me mention a deal that we've been working on in Nottingham. And it's been going on for months. Well, I'm pleased to say we finally made that deal and we launched it through Property Hub Invest. And on the launch evening, it sold out in less than a minute. Yes, 10 houses in Nottingham sold out in less than a minute. Crazy, right? Well, yes, it was great to see that there were so many investors so confident in that particular investment, particularly after spending so long putting it together. But there was one special investor, and they were all, of course, special, but one, at least as special to me, who made an investment and took one of those properties. And that was our very own Mr. D. So we thought we have to podcast about why he's invested. Because, being completely honest, I still don't know. We've been that busy, we haven't caught up to chat about why he's invested. Of course, I know it's a great deal, but beyond that, I don't know. So it's not only you learning today, it's I'm learning as well. So Rob, you ready to be put on the spot?
I am. I'm actually really looking forward to this conversation because I've not spoken to anyone about it yet, and I'll probably learn more about my motivations as a result of having the chat. So let's get into it.
You'll have to pass this episode on to your wife afterwards. So the first thing I want to know is, were you actively looking to make an investment?
Going into this year, I absolutely was. Because I didn't invest at all last year. I was putting money into the development project that I've talked about on the podcast before and not making any return on that money. And I was also investing in the business. So from both a money perspective and a time and focus perspective as well, last year just didn't happen for me. So going into this year, I really wanted to make an investment. It was literally on my to-do list for the year in Trello. When the pandemic hit, my assumption was that would slow things down. And it definitely wasn't the case of, brilliant, global pandemic, now's the moment, let's go. But the right deal came along.
Now, I know that you're a big fan of Nottingham and you've already got investments there. Was it only Nottingham for you, or were you looking at other areas? What were you looking at? What were you considering?
Nottingham was a big focus area for me. I've spoken about why I like Nottingham many times on the podcast in the past. And while we've also talked on the podcast before about how we're open to owning property pretty much anywhere if it works. It doesn't have to be all within a specific focus area. I do have a bit of a Nottingham focus and I was keen to do more there. And it being Nottingham certainly helped me make a move right now because it's an area that I know well. So it wasn't like Nottingham or nowhere, but it was definitely another entry in the pros column for me.
What other towns or cities would have been in the pro column for you? So Nottingham, a clear favourite with yourself, but where else are you liking right now?
I think it's all the same places that we talked about when we were doing our hotspots, really. My strategy now is quite closely aligned to the type of thing we've talked about on the podcast before, which is buying quality at a good price and holding it. And the areas that we've talked about, like Liverpool and Sheffield, where there are some really quality products and demand is growing and prices are still low, so there's upside there. That fits that strategy. I've been looking a bit at Newcastle as well. I've not actually been there and I've not got anywhere near looking at individual investments or pulling the trigger, but just getting interested in it because it's one of those places where prices are still below their last peak and it's fundamentally a strong city. So I think there's something interesting there. I do think it's currently a bit early though. So that had been on my radar as well. But it's all essentially getting at the same thing, which is trying to find quality stock in an area of growing demand where pricing is still competitive.
It's really interesting that you name check Newcastle there because the other ones are obvious. We both talked about those in our hotspots video on YouTube. But only in the last week or two, we've been contacting developers in Newcastle, very early stages, but just initial contact to let them know we're here and we exist and we can help them like we do with other developers in Yorkshire, Midlands and the Northwest. But what's really interesting is neither of us have talked about that. We've both independently gone and done that. And at some point, I'm sure would have had that conversation, but one of those sickening alignment things again, Rob, where we're operating and thinking the same way, which is really cool. So at what point did you go, okay, this investment is of interest to me? Because you mustn't have had the information for long because we'd only just put it together for the investment launch to the investors at Property Hub Invest. So for people listening, Rob didn't get a preview weeks and weeks in advance of all the information. He knew something in Nottingham was coming. He knew the headline information. But Rob, you only got the core investment information maybe a day or two before everyone else, but not much more.
No, literally a day. I knew that something was coming up. I knew where it was because the team knew that I had some knowledge of Nottingham. So when the opportunity first came up, they said to me, what do you think of this area? So I Googled it and said, oh yeah, that's actually a really good location. But I didn't think any more of it. But I wasn't actually involved in putting the materials together. I remember actually seeing them for the first time and going, wow, this is really strong. And going through it and getting more and more excited. I'll be honest, there's got to be something of an emotional component to this. We talk about keeping emotion out of deals. I think it's really important to do so. I also think it's impossible to do so completely. And it helps that it was a really beautiful looking development. That plays into the investment strategy as well, but it certainly made it easier to look at the pretty photos and get excited about it than it would be if it was a bit more of a utilitarian investment.
Yeah, it was easy to fall in love with this one. I know that wasn't the reason why you invested, but it does help. So other than it looking great, what was the trigger for you to go, right, I'm in? What were the boxes ticked for you? Other than it being Nottingham and it looking great, what else was satisfying your needs for you to make an investment decision? Because you made it pretty quickly.
For me, it ticked a lot of the boxes for my strategy in different ways. So location is one, both in it being Nottingham, but also the prime part of Nottingham. Another one being premium stock. And that's something I want because it gives greater potential for capital growth and tends to be easier to manage and take your pick of tenants. Also, a big factor is the fact that they were houses. So this is a four-bedroom house. I don't have any big houses in my portfolio. I've got some smaller ones, but nothing that big and nothing that premium. It's actually quite rare to find four-bedroom houses that stack as an investment at all because the price point is higher, and particularly unusual to find a really premium four-bedroom house that works as an investment. So I wanted that as a diversifier. And that also plays into the last point, which is however much I understand intellectually that over the long term, it's the capital growth where you make most of your money, I need to be able to see a return. I just can't shake it. And actually stacked up really well. I'm really pleased with the rental return that's projected, and I'm really happy to just collect that for years, even if there's no movement in the market for a reasonably long time. And a kind of a subtle sub point of that is that in itself is kind of an indicator that there is growth to come, because it seems like an anomaly that's going to be corrected at some point. You shouldn't be able to get a property like this in this area of this quality and still make a rental return on it. You can now. It seems likely that in the future, prices should go up. So that's not possible anymore.
Probably do a whole podcast based on that answer because there's so much to unpack there. I'd encourage people to go back and listen through that answer and take out bit by bit why Rob invested. But to pick out three highlights for me, and all of them we've talked about on the podcast in the past, but hearing the theory is great, but having one of us make an investment where those boxes are ticked is even better to help the learning. So one of the points that you've made is invest in the best areas, because a lot of people will go and look at Nottingham or Liverpool or Sheffield or Leeds or wherever else and go, right, I've heard great things about these areas, let's invest. And then they'll go and invest in something mediocre, or in an area that's not quite there yet and might take a while to get there. For most people, particularly if you're used to Southeast prices, investing in the best places in these towns and cities is doable. So, like this house, four-bedroom executive home, beautiful gated development in a top area of Nottingham for around £300,000. Incredible! And the great thing about investing in a great area is it normally will remain great. So when you have a downturn, you've got an extra level of protection. So if you are investing in the Midlands, the Northwest, Yorkshire, wherever for the first time, don't try and be too clever and go and invest in somewhere that's a bit cheap or up and coming or might have potential. Just go and invest in the best area. It's a lot safer, it's a lot easier to do. Another thing you raised there, Rob, second thing I want to highlight is the combination of fundamentals plus a return equals potential capital growth. Not guaranteed capital growth, but if the fundamentals of an area are great and the yield is attractive, then something is out of balance and it normally doesn't last for that long. So when you do find that combination, and that's what we look for ourselves and for our investors, it really gets us excited because we think, okay, well, in the past, this equation has equaled capital growth. So the potential for that happening over the long term is looking pretty good. And finally, it's really interesting to see you diversify within your portfolio by investing in different towns and cities, because you're not wholly exclusive in Nottingham. You've got your portfolio all over the place and different types of property. You're diversifying more than most property investors ever would. You know, as you build that portfolio up, if you concentrate on one town or village or city and you do the same type of investment in that town, village or city, then you are putting yourself at risk. You could have a much bigger upside, but you could have a much bigger downside if you don't get it right. And by investing the way that you have, it de-risks you. So there's a lot that people can take away from your answer there. And there's more as well. So as I said, go back and listen to it. If you pick out all those points and all those reasons Rob invested, I think you'll be making better investment decisions.
When you put it like that, I think I've got more of a strategy than I thought I did. I think I felt a bit self-conscious about my strategy in the past because I've talked openly on the podcast about how I've got it wrong at times and failed to adapt to when I should do. But you've done a good job of summarizing my thought process there. And not everyone's going to have weight on the same factors that I do. But I think those are all aspects that investors should be considering when making a decision.
Now, we haven't talked about the elephant in the room right now. And the reason this investment is even more interesting, and it's been interesting anyway, is that you've invested during a pandemic, a global crisis where lots of people are fearful and are scared about their futures. And then you've gone and made a property investment in the middle of it all. So was it difficult to make that investment considering everything that's going on? Did you have to think a lot harder? You've made your decision pretty quickly, as I've said. So how difficult was it for you to overcome that fear, if you had any fear at all?
I'd say it wasn't that difficult. But it's definitely more difficult than it would have been if this opportunity had come along in January. So in January, it feels like another world right now, but it was a new year. Everyone was excited. The market was looking good. We were getting the Boris bounce and everything else. If this particular deal had come along at that point, it would have been 100% yes instantly. Of course, it would be ridiculous if the way that the world had changed since then hadn't factored into my decision. And I definitely hesitated and I definitely gave it a deeper consideration than I otherwise would have done.
So what did give you the confidence to invest?
There were two things. Firstly, this deal was just perfect for what I was looking for the reasons that we talked about before. If this had come along a few months ago, it would have been an absolute bite your hand off, yes, let's do this. If I'd let the current situation put me off, it could easily have taken me a year or more to find something that perfect, that good again. So the first factor is the strength of the deal. I wouldn't have been really excited to rush out and buy something average at the moment. I wouldn't want to do that. I only invested because it was a really strong deal. And as part of the strength of that deal, there was also a really nice discount baked in. That really helps because who knows what the market's going to do over the next year, 2 years, 3 years. But having that discount in there de-risks it very nicely. The second factor is my strategy, which is very much long-term buy and hold. And that's not going to be the right strategy for everyone, but it's mine. And that makes it far easier to be somewhat more relaxed about the current situation. If I was investing now with a time horizon of 2 or 3 years, it probably wouldn't be making much sense to invest because, like I said, we've got our opinions about what's going to happen. We've talked about them extensively over the last few weeks, but we don't know. What I feel like I do know with relative certainty is that in 20 years, the market is going to be in a stronger place than it is today. Therefore, I'm not that bothered about what it's like in a year's time. Of course, I'm not going to be delighted if I buy and then prices drop by 20%. That's not something I want to happen. I'd far rather buy in at the lowest possible point. But given that I'm getting a discount, I'm collecting rent that I'm very happy to sit and collect every month, and even without any growth, that alone keeps me happy. And if prices do drop over the next couple of years, it makes absolutely no difference to me except on paper. Those ultimately were logical arguments that overcame the very natural, I think, fear of investing at a time like this.
I think what's really interesting is that you said that, you know, if this was 6 months earlier and this deal came along, no brainer, you invest straight away. You don't even need to think about it. But that's the thing. It's only this current climate, this global crisis that we're working through right now, is that this deal could be made because, as people would have heard on the podcast, we've been taking a long time to put this particular deal together. And it was only the market uncertainty that allowed us to push back and go, no, come on, let's do this deal, that they eventually went, okay, now in this climate, I'm willing to accept that price. So in a way, possibly it was COVID that made your investment decision easier. Who knows? So you've talked about how this is an investment for the long term. You've talked about your attitude to price movement right now and how you take the long-term view. One thing that isn't long-term is getting it let for the first time, because you don't want that to be a long-term thing. But some people may be nervous for you that, oh, is he going to get a tenant? Like, what are you going to do there? So what's your view on that?
That is really interesting, because that's something that I found myself thinking about. And normally, obviously, I'm thinking about whether there's tenant demand, but I'm not thinking about that by the time I'm actually making the do I buy this decision or not, because I'd already factored that in far earlier in the process when thinking about where I'm going to buy and what I'm going to buy. So that question's kind of answered itself. There is that extra layer to it at the moment, like, which is, will this current situation prevent it from getting let? And it is something that was on my mind, but there were a few reasons that helped me get past that. One is, God bless how long it takes to buy and sell property in the UK. By the time it completes, let's say it's going to be a couple of months, my assumption is viewings are going to be a lot easier and the market's going to be moving faster again. So that helps. Another is the area and the product. Again, it comes back to the quality of the deal. In this particular area, there's hardly anything for rent, and I know that things rent quickly. So it'll be slower if the rental market is struggling, but it'll still be relatively okay. And the third thing is, it plays back into this whole thing about it being a long-term investment. It's not nice to have an investment that's sitting empty. It's not nice to be paying out the mortgage and the council tax and not have anything coming in. While that's happening, if it does happen, I'm not going to be delighted. But it's also not going to make or break the investment. It might make the first year's return look bad, but over 20 years, it doesn't make any difference. And I can afford to have the property empty if I have to. It's not going to push my finances to the edge. And I'm also perfectly willing to take a hit on the rent for the first year. If in order to get it let, I need to let it for less than the number I've got in my head that I think it's worth, then I will. It's not a problem because, again, it's only a year. I think it's true to say that a situation like this with a pandemic is pretty much a one-off, or at least close to a one-off in our lifetimes. But it also happens if you're investing in new build property every time. You're always adding a fair chunk of supply to a market at a particular moment in time, and it takes a bit of time for that to be worked through. Now, this is only 10 houses, but it's a small area. There's not that much turnover. So that is adding some extra supply that would take longer to work through at the best of times anyway. But that's something I'm aware of and something I factor in.
So you're in the middle of this investment. It's not completed yet. You've got a lot to do. And I know Property Hub is keeping you busy as well. But what's next? You had time to think about that yet?
Not really. But it is weird how I'm no less excited about investing than I was at the start of the year, and possibly more so. I think it's a bit of natural contrarian coming out. And I know that there will be other really good deals to be done. I'm definitely not going to be rushing out to deploy all my cash in the next couple of months because it's the opportunity of a lifetime. I don't think that's the case, but I do think that there are going to be really good deals to be done. I wouldn't go out and buy something average, but I will be dedicating more time than I otherwise would to going out and looking for something truly great, because I think there's a higher chance that it will be out there. And we are at a moment of real risk and uncertainty at the moment. But I find for me, because my time frame is really long, I think about the worst possible case, and the worst scenario I've seen is prices fall by 30%. I think there's a close to zero chance of that happening. But I think about the possibility of that happening, and I think, how would I feel about that? The answer is I wouldn't feel good, but I've lived through drops bigger than that in other investments that I own. So I know emotionally I could handle it. And over the time frame that I'm talking about, I know that ultimately it'll all be okay. So this is a market where you've got to be very cautious. But I am finding myself more engaged and a little bit excited than I otherwise would have been. Maybe I should be more worried. I don't know.
This has been brilliant, Rob. And I know I'm not going to be the only one grateful for you sharing all this and the insights to your investment. But what do you feel is the biggest takeaway from all this information that you've passed on here? What should people be taking away from this, from your experience and your decision?
I think the biggest thing that you can take away from this, and this isn't going to be the first time you've heard this thought expressed on the Property Podcast, but it's a really nice illustration of it, is that you should be extremely clear about what you want and why you're investing. And there are two reasons for that. The first being that not everyone should be doing what I'm doing right now. You might have different opinions about the market that lead you in a different direction anyway. So you might think that that 30% drop that I said close to no chance, you might think there's a very strong chance. So that might take you in a different direction. But even if we were aligned on our thoughts on the market, our strategies might take us to completely different places. What I'm doing is what I believe is the right thing for me to do based on my strategy and my personal situation. So this shouldn't be Rob D's buying, I should rush out and buy right now. Or it shouldn't be you go and read something doom and gloom in the paper and go, this guy's saying everything's terrible, so I shouldn't do anything right now. It's neither of those. It's work out what's best for you. And you can only do that by understanding your own strategy and your own goals. The other reason is that because I'm at this point very clear about what it is that I want, what I'm investing for, how long I'm investing for, what works for me and all that kind of thing, it made it very easy to make the decision. Not easy. I've said it was difficult, but not that difficult. If I hadn't known what I wanted and what would be the perfect investment for me, then I wouldn't have known when it came along, and therefore I wouldn't be able to override the concerns that I had. And if you're not there yet, you don't have that level of clarity, Don't feel bad about it. It's taken me years of podcasting about it, which is actually a really good way to find out what you believe, because it forces you to think very deeply about it. And I've got it wrong in the past, as I've talked about. But I think for those two reasons, it really is a great demonstration of the power of being clear about what you want, what you're investing for, and what the best way of doing that is for you as an individual. That's not an easy thing to do. It takes time, but it shows that all the time that you do spend getting to that point is time well spent.
So how was memory lane for you, Rob? Was it nice reliving that investment and going through the emotions that you felt at that time?
Yeah, it's funny because it's just sort of bedded in now, and I'd forgotten how heightened those emotions were at the time. Not just with me, but everything that was happening at that time. It was such a weird summer, and it was that time when the weather was absolutely glorious and yet the world was melting down. It's just such a weird time.
So the first thing I'd probably want to know, and I'm sure everyone else listening would want to know, is do you have any regrets? Like, is there anything, or if not regrets, do you have any lessons that you'd go, okay, you know what, I wish I'd done this differently? Now we're a couple of years on.
This is really easy to say with hindsight, but I wish I'd bought more.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were.
I know. It's obviously a very common and easy thing to say with hindsight. And there'll be times that I wish I hadn't bought that at all. But it's easy to do looking back. But I've said this repeatedly about the time, sort of like around about 2012, 2013, kind of like when we were starting the podcast, because in hindsight, that was an amazing time to buy property, and kind of knew it was at the time, but just didn't have the confidence to really push it. Around about the middle of 2020, for whatever reason, I was feeling super confident despite the state that the world was in. And that's probably because by then, like 8 years on, I knew a lot more. I could have had a lot more faith that my views were based on something solid and my analysis was likely to be right. So I absolutely would have gone and bought more, but it was just made so difficult because of the restrictions. I couldn't actually get up to anywhere to look at property. I had very limited time for doing anything because we were adapting our business to deal with everything that was going on. And we were in the process of setting up the fund that went on to be portfolio. So there's just so much happening that any more investing just didn't happen. But in retrospect, I wish that I'd made time and really pushed it and got around the restrictions sometimes, because obviously history bears out that although it didn't seem like it would be at the time, it was a very good time to buy.
And yet so many people, whether amateurs or so-called professionals, were calling the end of the financial world, not just the physical world, and were saying how grim things were going to be and how bad it was going to become. And based on all of that, it would be a terrible time to do anything investment-wise. Yet you ignored those voices. You didn't have to go far to find those voices as well. You know, mainstream media and social media, it's full of people like that. I've known you a long time, Rob, and I know you're very good at, you know, switching off to that. But is there any advice that you can give to anybody else who's plotting their course right now and maybe feeling a bit nervous because of this external noise and what they can do?
I think what really helped me have confidence was, like I said, the fact that my views were based on something solid. I should have a fairly decent foundation around property because we do the podcast. You and I speak pretty much every day and we have loads of conversations about what's going on and help to sort of bounce ideas off each other and develop our views. So having that core confidence in yourself on a particular subject, I think makes it easier to drown out all the noise. If you don't have that, then what choice do you really have? If you don't have that anchor, then you are just going to get buffeted around by the latest thing that you heard. So someone might tell you that something's great. The next person might tell you something that's terrible. So what can you do other than be influenced by the people around you? Because you don't have anything solid of your own. And that was the same motivation for the book recently. I wanted to give people a solid foundation so they could really understand something. Because then I think it's a lot easier to go like, you know what? For these very good reasons, I believe this is right. Therefore, I'm just going to go for it. May turn out to be completely wrong. And there will be times in the future, I'm sure, when we do get things wrong. But having the confidence to do something is easy if you've reasoned your way into that position rather than just being emotionally driven by what's going on.
Absolutely. Okay, Rob, we're going to get to the bit now around what's happened since. So before we get to the numbers, let's start with just owning the property and looking after it. First 2 years, how's it been? Because you are hands-off. I'm sure lots of people know that, but you don't manage the properties directly yourself. You don't live local to this property. You are the definition of a hands-off investor. That's how we like to operate. So how has it been trying to be that hands-off investor with this property, especially buying it in the middle of the pandemic?
Well, the pandemic itself wasn't too much of a factor, obviously, because it's property. It took months to actually complete, so some of the restrictions had eased off a bit by the time that happened. This is a brand new property, and people sometimes have the idea that when you buy a new build property, everything will be perfect on day one and there'll be absolutely nothing to do. That's not the case. New build doesn't mean that there will be absolutely no issues and nothing to sort out. Whenever there's a property that's brand new, there'll be snagging issues, there'll be things that need to be sorted out, and that is normal. The benefit of new build is that those things will get sorted out and all the major stuff is under warranty. So there were bits and bobs to sort out, but then after that, we've got some tenants in there, a family, and they've been in there ever since and have had absolutely no issues. So very much the typical kind of hands-off model that we try to apply. When you first buy a property, there will be things to do, there will be set up, that's normal, but then very quickly that eases off. And ideally, you get a long-term tenant in there and there's not much to do. And so far, that's what's happened.
Okay, so numbers time then. Let's look at capital growth and both income since you've owned a property, which is roughly 2 years in. So how have you done on both fronts?
Well, capital growth, it's hard to say because there haven't been any direct comparables that have sold since then, which is not surprising because it's not been a long time. And it's always difficult in the first couple of years to establish value. But also I'd say in the first couple of years, it doesn't matter that much because you're probably not going to be looking to sell or refinance or anything else. So it's not something I've been keeping an eye on. Nottingham as a whole, where this property is up by about 14%. Having a quick look at some other properties locally, I'd say that it's probably up by at least 10%. So it's somewhere in that sort of range. There's also been the income ever since. So I'm making net about £900 a month from that property after the mortgage and all expenses. There's been, I think, about by the time it completed and everything, I think there's been about 19 months, give or take. So that's around about £17,000 in rental income that I've received as well. So financially, no complaints.
Well, not bad at all, Rob. Your paper gain is very good and your cash in the bank gain is very good as well. I'm sure there are no complaints whatsoever. And well rewarded as well, because I know we've mentioned it already, but there was a lot of people, including some professional commentators, who were talking the market down. So not saying that it was going to slow or, you know, be flat, but actually saying there were going to be huge falls in prices. So I've known you for a long time, so I'm not surprised you ignored the noise, but well done. And hopefully you listening can take inspiration from this, that when it is tough and when external noise is going against you, make a decision based on your true beliefs, on the information that you have and not others. Don't let other people's fear or misinformation put you off from your decisions. If you feel that the information that you have at your disposal is telling you that an investment is a good thing to do right now, push on. Other people won't have done the research that you've done. Most commentators on property get their predictions wrong year after year with what the market's going to do. Not just when there's a pandemic, consistently. We've talked about that on the podcast before. So don't listen to the so-called experts. Don't listen to the naysayers on social media. Make your own decisions based on your own information and your own gut. And normally that will serve you very well. We'll be back on Tuesday with Ask Rob and Rob, the main podcast. A fresh new episode will be back on Thursday. So until then, take care, have fun. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.